This morning we continue the series that we began a couple of weeks ago about presence. What does it look like to have God present in our lives and to be in the real world? What is that like? What's the impact of God's presence in our regular lives? And what is it? How do we connect daily life with what God is doing and what is going to take place? Here in Luke chapter 21, Jesus is walking along, and he's with his disciples, and they're talking about all kinds of things. God is eternal. He's not bound by time and space and other constraints. But as we live with God, even in the real world, and knowing that God is present in our lives, still we find ourselves with our attention on the temporary. Walking along in the city in Jerusalem, the disciples were looking at the temple. And this is a model of what Jerusalem probably looked like in the first century. The temple is there in the foreground. And toward the background, this is kind of what the city would have probably looked like. It's based on some historic records, some writings and things that describe what the city looked like, how the temple dominated Jerusalem in those days. So in Luke 21, verse 5, while some were speaking of the temple, how it was adorned with noble stones and offerings, is where the attention of the disciples was directed. The noble stones, the offerings, the appearance of this massive structure in Jerusalem. This is Herod's temple that the disciples would have seen. Understand this. The temple had been built in Jerusalem by Solomon. So the people had been rescued, redeemed from Egypt to kind of understand the timeline of God's people. So they've been brought up from the slavery in Egypt back then into the land God had promised. They take over the land, they settle in Jerusalem and take that city. David was a king who wanted to build the temple, but God said, no, you're a man of war. So David's son Solomon, under his leadership, when he was king, the temple was constructed, the first temple. Well, that temple was destroyed in 586 BC when Babylon came and carried off the temple furnishings, destroyed the temple. It was laid waste. The people were captive in Babylon for roughly 40 years and then were released to return. So they come back to the city and it's wrecked. They rebuild the wall, and that's the story of Nehemiah, if you know that story. And then they also rebuild the temple. Well, that temple that was constructed in that time frame, which is 500-ish BC is when it's done. That was pretty modest in its size, in its construction. It was not the grand temple. So along comes Herod the Great. So when we're in the first century BC, roughly 20 years or so before Jesus, is when the temple under Herod the Great was like blown up, like not blown up, but like made big, the reconstruction project. Herod had the idea of a legacy through grand construction. And here we are, 2,000 years later talking about him. So, it worked. He had a legacy. He under his leadership, they rebuilt the temple into something of much grander scale and appearance. And you can see, in the picture of the model, how it dominated the whole skyline. If you were on a hill looking over at Jerusalem, the temple is the thing you see. A group of us are going to travel there this coming summer, and wow, it will be exciting to see the temple, except, like Jesus said, it's not there anymore. Right? Have you ever admired construction or architecture? Noticed buildings? Paid attention if you're like on the street to where you are. I remember when we first had moved here and we were going to go into the city of San Francisco for one of the first times we had done that. And I drive a pickup truck that's pretty long and kind of wide. And so I thought, I don't know if there's even a place to park for my truck down that way. So we took BART, which was fantastic. It worked out really well. So we got on the train and we went, up along toward Oakland and then down and under, and then we stayed underground, right? And I remember the moment of coming up the escalator, and all of a sudden, big, enormous buildings, right? And I remember noticing, like, whoa, we're in the city. So I grew up near Cincinnati, Ohio, so don't remind me about the Bengals. Especially if your local team is playing them today. You're welcome. Anyway, Cincinnati's a city. It's decent size. It's got a number of people. It's got a downtown. There's sports teams that are there. There's, you know, all the things that a city has that city generally has. But it doesn't have, like, the, whoa, kind of buildings. There's a few that are pretty good, but just coming up from there, and all of a sudden, these enormous structures. So you're walking around like this, looking at these buildings, right? And are you paying attention to where the BART station is? No, of course not. Right, it's easy to get distracted by the things we're looking at and lose sight of what's really important, like the way home. Sometimes it's easy for us to be distracted. Maybe it's not architecture. Maybe it's not buildings. Maybe it's a to-do list. Do you have a to-do list? Do you write it down? Or do you, you know, put it in your device of whatever? Is it written? Is it mental? Or is it a combination of all of that? That's what I do. I don't really recommend it, but it generally works. Right? There's things that we have to do, things that we need to take care of. Maybe you have a list of things that you have to accomplish today. Maybe now that I've said the word list and to do, now you're thinking about it, right? Sorry. We can get so easily distracted, right? Our focus can be directed toward things of the world. The urgent often trumps the important for us. What do you have to do? What do you have to do right now? Right. Where's your attention? What's pulling your attention away from what's really important? Sometimes our minds are so divided, our attentions are so short, and you know, that's one of the signs of the times in which we live, that our attention spans are brief, right? Maybe that has to do with media, with, you know, if you grew up, I grew up with, I've heard this at least, Sesame Street. If you watch Sesame Street, this is interesting. Watch it as an adult and realize how often it changes. The things that they do are, you know, 30 seconds or a minute or whatever. Like, this is what our kids are seeing as they grow up. This is what I saw as a kid growing up, where, you know, the angle of the camera changes, the thing that they're doing changes, the theme, you know, it's just constant change. And then we wonder why we have attention problems, right? Well, we've taught that. Yeah. We have attention issues. It's the sign of the times. The disciples are there focused on the temple, and then they begin to ask about the signs of the times. Jesus described the destruction of the temple. So first, this is what happens. As for these things, this is what Jesus says, they're looking at the temple. As for these things that you're looking at, the days will come when there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down. So those are Jesus' words about the destruction of Jerusalem initially. So the disciples are like, well, tell us, what's going to be the sign? How are we going to know when this is about to happen? How can we understand and interpret what's going on? Jesus is like, it's just a building. It'll be destroyed. It's not the end of the line. This is not where, you know, all of God's glory isn't in this building. Is in this architecture and in this structure and this thing that people have built. Now, it was a good place. You know, people went there for sacrifice. They went there to connect with God. They went there and they learned, right? So it was good to have that as the focus. But Jesus is saying here, this isn't it, right? What if this building is destroyed? Do you still have God? Well, I sure hope so. What if this building is destroyed? Would we still have God, right? This building may one day, who knows, it could not be here. That's possible. And in fact, you know, the Hayward Fault is like right there someplace. One of the things that Dennis Dong was on our board of directors. He's recently relocated to Colorado. And one of the last things that he did as part of the board of directors was to create an earthquake preparedness kit. Because should something happen, should there be an earthquake, a big one, this building, well, would it survive it? We hope so, of course. Like, I don't think the architects designed this to be suspect.
Right.
No, they did their homework. It was here in 1991, so we're good, right? But we should be prepared. So there's an earthquake preparedness kit. It's got a hard hat in it and some other, you know, tools and devices and things that we might need should something happen, and hopefully not, but if there are people in the building when it did, how would we react? How would we respond to that? It's possible that this building doesn't withstand, doesn't stand up forever. Is God still here? So Jesus starts talking about, oh yeah, you're going to see this building is going to be destroyed. What are the signs for that? And Jesus points them further down the road, right? Much beyond the building and the temple and even the destruction of Jerusalem, because there are signs that point to the end. Here are some of the signs that we see. Wars and tumults. And then Jesus says, do not be terrified, for these things must first take place. But the end will not be at once. And he goes on. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. And guess what? That's been happening. Well, in the Roman days, and, you know, a little less far back from that, and then in recent times, have nations been rising against nations? Have there been wars happening? Like, all the time, since Jesus' day. The destruction of the temple happened in AD 70, and all those stones were thrown down, and the only thing that remains is the Western Wailing Wall. So that's the part that we get to see this coming summer. And there's been wars, and there's been battles, and nations, and fighting, and all this, and these are signs that the end is coming. We live in the last days, but we've been living in the last days for a long time. Jesus goes on, there will be earthquakes, and in various places, famines and pestilences, and there will be terrors and great signs from heaven. But before all this, they will lay their hands on you and persecute you, etc. The end. The last days. Judgment. In the text from Malachi that was connected to this one, Malachi the prophet was looking ahead to times of destruction and suffering. And so, you know, we get all these ideas in our minds about what judgment like might look like with wars and persecution. And then in Luke 21 and verse 26, Jesus talks about people fainting with fear and foreboding of what is coming. The Revelation, we're going through Revelation in the Bible class that happens right before the service. And we were, you know, talking about the plagues of God and how all this looks. And it's kind of frightening, right? That all these things are going to happen, that the judgment of the earth and the destruction of what we know, right? This can strike fear in us. This can strike fear in us because there's the wrath of God on the earth as punishment for the sins of people. But rather than have fear, Jesus points to, instead of focusing on the things that we could be afraid of, lift up your heads because of the presence of redemption. Presence of redemption. This is what we see in verse 27. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Jesus is coming back. This is the hope in the middle of all of this wars and tumults and danger and destruction. Wait, but Jesus is coming back. In a cloud with power and great glory. Jesus, the Savior, the one who died on the cross for the to pay the penalty for our sin, the one who rose again from the dead to assure us and guarantee to us life everlasting, the one who ascended and took his place at the right hand of God, that same Jesus is the Son of Man who is coming again in power and great glory. So it just makes all of the destruction and all of the danger and all of the things that we see pale in comparison. Malachi's words were, the Son of Righteousness will rise with healing in its wings, and you will leap like calves from the stall, bounding into this new reality. This is the hope that we have. In the face of danger and destruction, we have hope because of the presence of redemption. We don't need to fear what will take place. See, straighten up and raise your heads because your redemption is drawing near. Redemption, being bought back. The price was paid. And the full redemption that is ours in Jesus will be ours in reality. Like right now, we have it, right? But it's not fully realized. Does that make sense? And it's kind of hard and complicated to recognize the tension that that draws. That Jesus paid the price. He died on the cross. He rose again. All that's done. And yet, we still are stuck in this world that's broken, that's sinful, where the wars and all the things he told us to look for, they are happening all the time. And that tension that we draw between Jesus won the war and the battle still rages. This is where we live. But the day is coming. That great and glorious and awesome day that will create fear and foreboding, especially for people who don't know what we know, who don't have what we have, who don't understand the peace that we have in our Redeemer. Our redemption is drawing near. Yes, indeed, our redemption is found in Jesus alone. Where he is, there is rescue from all of this, from the world, from the wars, from the suffering. Though Jesus is coming back and we long for that, we still have to be present in the real world because we live here. So we'll be present in the real world. Because Jesus didn't want his disciples to huddle in fear and foreboding about what was going to happen a long time later. At least, well, this is 2019. 1,900 years later. Jesus doesn't want us to be so heavenly-minded we're of no earthly good. We need to do what needs to be done. Be active in your faith, living by the word of Christ, serving the Lord, doing the things that need to be done. Yes, there's destruction coming. Yes, there's going to be fear, but our redemption is drawing near, and as we wait, we can do things that he commanded, like love your neighbor. What does that look like? Love your neighbor. It can look like having a conversation with someone in need. It can look like finding someone who's afraid of what's happening and bringing comfort. Someone who's already feeling that fear and foreboding and bringing a word of peace. Someone who's worried about war so that they would understand that Jesus is coming back. Maybe loving your neighbor happens in a very practical way because your neighbor has a need and you can help meet that need. There's a lot of ways that we can carry that out, that we can love our neighbors, that we can care for people. Love your neighbor, care for your family, do your work, take care of your business. All those things that are on your to-do list that, oh, I just reminded you of again. I've got my own that just keeps playing, by the way. Take care of all those things. Do what needs to be done. And as we do that, we still need to be ready for Christ's return, which means keep looking up. Jesus doesn't want us so heavenly minded we're of no earthly good. He doesn't want us so earthly focused that we forget about him. There's a balance. Keep looking up so that we remember what's important. Keep looking up so we remember that he's coming. As we confessed in the creed, from thence he will come to judge the living and the dead. That's the one we long for. That's the one we wait for. That's the one in whom we have our hope. Let's be ready. Jesus is coming. Our redemption is on its way. Amen.